This Week in Chicago History now, sponsored by UChicagoMedicine.org. Good morning, Anna DeVlantis. We have Lollapalooza again, and it started here, didn't it?
It started here back in 1991, the very first Lollapalooza, Bob. It wasn't in Chicago back then, but it was a touring festival, moving from city to city, you know, and unlike the big music fests before it, like Woodstock and so many others, it toured from city to city before eventually ending up here in Chicago. And Lolla was intended to be a one-time thing back then. You know, you think about it, Perry Farrell created it as a farewell tour for his band Jane's Addiction. And he was thinking big, Bob, if you think about it, because one of the things he wanted to do and accomplish was have this big coming together of the names and music, the most creative artists at the time. And even though Jane's Addiction was considered alternative music, Nine Inch Nails performed, they were considered industrial, rap artists. Ice-T was an original performer. In Living Color performed. So did Susie and the Banshees. So it was this unique assemblage of bands that no one expected to ever perform together, and people loved it. We pulled some of the MTV coverage of that very first Lollapalooza. The tour kicked off in Phoenix in the summertime. Go figure. Here's a Kurt Loder of MTV News.
A while-new alternative rock tour kicked off in Phoenix, Arizona on Thursday night. It's a multi-act package called the Lollapalooza Tour, and it features Jane's Addiction, along with such opening acts as Living Color, Ice-T, Susie and the Banshees, and the Butthole Surfers. Our man Dave Kendall was on hand for the Phoenix opener, and here's a quick preview.
Okay. Right. It's 109 degrees, and the excitement is running high here at the opening date of Lollapalooza, a traveling carnival of music, information, and art.
1991, and the name actually came from the Three Stooges, didn't it, Anna?
Farrell always claimed this in interviews, Bob, and it's been fact-checked. Even the Tribune said, we can't find this particular Three Stooges episode, but Perry Farrell swore. He said he heard Lollapalooza in one of those, and he used it. I guess it was also a name for big lollipops.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know how his brain worked, but you know, thank goodness for Perry Farrell, because he put this thing together back then, and it's become the thing, right? It's survived three decades.
Back in 1934, July 22nd was the date for the end of John Dillinger here, wasn't it?
1934 was when he was shot and killed this week by federal agents, then known as Public Enemy Number One, John Dillinger, right outside the Biograph Theater there on Lincoln Avenue. Prison escapee, serial bank robber, wanted cop killer. The feds had just been trying to hunt Dillinger down for such a long time. We dug up the audio here, Bob, from the woman, the actual woman who provided the tip, gave the feds the lead they needed in order to find him. Anna Sage was her name, Romaine. An immigrant. She's a mother, also a madam and an escort. She escorted John Dillinger to a showing of a Clark Gable film at the Biograph that night, and the feds were able to move in as the show was letting out.
Dillinger killed by federal agents commanded by Inspector Samuel Cowley, assisted by East Chicago, Indiana Police.
When I learned he was Dillinger, I knew he had been killing without mercy. So I went to a policeman I knew, and he arranged a conference with the government agents. So July 22nd, I called Mr. Purvis, and I told him that Dillinger was going to a show. The government agent was following us. When we came out, they tried to capture Dillinger, and he was killed. So I've done my part. Only thing I ask is what the government promised me, that I could stay here with my husband and son, and not be deported to Romania.
Right outside the Biograph on Lincoln Avenue, right?
Mm-hmm. She said she would wear a bright dress so that the feds could easily spot her and spot him, and he was killed exiting the theater. You probably remember, Bob, there was a big controversy a couple years ago. The Dillinger relatives who wanted to exhume his body, they thought there was some big doubt that in fact was John Dillinger buried there, but it turned out that I think most of them backed off and then agreed that, yeah, you know, that really is him in that Indiana grave, and he did not escape the feds that night.
This Week in Chicago, 1979, there were some real Chicago squad cars involved in the making of the Blues Brothers.
This may be why they decided not to use real squad cars in future movies. At some point, they curtailed that whole thing, Bob. But in 1979, the Blues Brothers was filming in the Chicago area. The movie that made Chicago area native Jim Belushi, you know, from Wheaton, an international star. It was big, but no one knew yet. And it's funny to think about it now, Bob, because so few movies were actually shot in Chicago at that time. People just didn't expect it maybe as much as we do now. So when they filmed that very lifelike, elaborate police chase scene downtown and Michigan Avenue and also, I'm sorry, Lakeshore Drive, people living in those downtown condo buildings were looking down on it, and they thought this was an actual criminal getting away, and they thought this was a real police chase. So they started calling into the news stations and reporting it. Oh my gosh, look at what we see. The news stations at the time were just saying they were flooded with calls. So it's what you say, Bob. The producers actually hired off-duty cops, used real city squad cars, rented them from the city. So I guess it looked pretty realistic.
Yeah, and you know what? You go back and look at that movie again. It holds up. It's really terrific. Great music. John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, fantastic. They didn't expect that movie to do well, did they?
No, you know, it's interesting because now you're like, well, duh, that's a great movie. Who can't see that? And I know that the soundtrack really helped it take off, as well as the creativity of that movie. They released it the same week as Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, boy.
So that sometimes tells you what they think of the movie is going to be. And they only released it in half of the theaters, so they didn't expect it to be a blockbuster. Here's one of those musical highlights we're talking about here. Favorite scene to many of us in the city. Jim Belushi singing in Sweet Home Chicago.
John Belushi.
Oh, John.
Come on, oh, baby, don't you wanna go? Come on, oh, baby, don't you wanna go?
And they had some really top-flight musicians, the real deals, to sing along and play along with the Blues Brothers. More This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis coming up momentarily after a quick info break.
WGN. What a wonderful world.
The great Louis Armstrong. Anna, I was not aware of the Chicago connection here.
You know, it's fascinating because he didn't live here his whole life. He certainly wasn't born here. New Orleans is where he was from. But one of the jazz greats of all time, huge influencer in the world of jazz, he arrived in Chicago a century ago, 100 years ago, July of 1922, Bob. Came here from New Orleans based on a telegram from his idol, Joe King Oliver, asking him to join his band. He had played with him in New Orleans, and he said, come on up to Chicago. So he played at first, second cornet, but wasn't that way for long. You know, his charisma, that smile, that voice, his incredible musical talents all combined to make him a huge star, and became a regular on the Ed Sullivan Show. Here he is, I think we pulled a clip from 1964, performing Hello Dolly on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Here he is, Louis Satchmo Armstrong.
Yeah, daddy! Hello, daddy. This is Louis, daddy. Mighty friend, have you back where you belong.
Louis and Ed Sullivan were actually close friends, weren't they?
Very close friends. They became, had appeared on his show a number of times. He toured with Ed Sullivan when he went to do shows for the military. Ed Sullivan became a pallbearer in his funeral eventually. But true story, Bob, that Hello Dolly, his rendition of it actually knocked the Beatles out of the number one spot on the Billboard chart. And he was in his 60s at the time, the oldest musician ever to have a number one hit at that time. Pretty cool.
Yeah, 1964. Well, about 9 years ago, in fact, exactly 9 years ago, it was a transformational time for our city, wasn't it?
The Fulton Market neighborhood, we all know it now as a place to go and dine and be entertained and work, especially if you're at a big company or a tech company. But that is just about when it happened. agenda. A decade ago, Google announced this week it was putting its Midwest headquarters right there in the middle of all the meatpacking. And it was, you're right, Bob, a transformational moment. You know, the meatpacking and the food companies were all based there. But this would become a tech hub pretty quickly. All the big technology companies, Facebook, Snapchat, you name it, they all wanted to have a presence there. But then other publicly traded companies, non-tech companies, wanted to be there too. We've seen Mondelez move there, Kimberly-Clark, Dyson. Of course, mm-hmm. McDonald's moved into Oprah's old space and just transformed that place. I don't know, have you been there lately, Bob? It's like a street festival every single night over there.
Yeah, I've been looking for a parking space for the last 6 months. So.
Right, right. Better get the pedicab or something. I don't know what you do over there, but it's just really taken off. It's
yeah,
cool.
And there's still a lot of construction there. And finally, this was a big week in 1968 in Soldier Field. Big doings were going on there, weren't they?
Yeah, you know, it just speaks to the kinds of events, Bob, that are born here in Chicago and that make you proud. The first Special Olympics was held at Soldier Field this week in 1968. 1,000 athletes came here from all across the country, and it was really, you know, the first of its kind of this type of event. Ann Burke is the one responsible for making it happen. She's an Illinois Supreme Court justice now, but then she was a 23-year-old phys ed teacher for the Park District, and she had said, you know, we hide away these kids in homes and institutions. Why not bring them out and allow them to compete and do something like this for them, something that feels big? Of course, the Kennedy Foundation, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, was big part of it, too. She helped fund it, and now it's expanded to 4 million athletes in 50 countries, but it all started right here at Soldier Field.
Yeah, an incredible thing to see, the Special Olympics. This week in Chicago history, more from Anna DeVantis again in this time period next Wednesday. Thank you, Anna. Have a good day.
You too. Talk to you later, Bob.